Welcome to Spice World, Between Two Dunes, an inebriated exploration of Willis E. McNally's Dune Encyclopedia. My name is Derek.
And my name is Mike. Each month we let you, our faithful Spice Worlders, vote on a topic from the Dune Encyclopedia. The votes are in, tallied. It's Highliners, Derek.
Highliners. Oh, that
was unanimously as well. I was surprised.
Yeah, we have Gamot is just dangling up there for them.
I mean, yeah. And I thought Akaz would be interesting to go into, because, like, what doesn't this planet do?
The drug capital of the universe.
Right, exactly. But Highliners.
Highliners.
Oh.
I'm stoked to get into it. I got a few. I even pulled from another article that's going to be pre-guild interstellar travel.
Oh.
Because, like, you know what? This one's super tiny. Might as well shoehorn it in.
All right.
Before we get too far, Mike, we got a new bottle to open.
We do.
I broke new ground here.
I was very impressed.
I'm growing, Mike. My horizons are boundless at this point. And we got a rosé this month, week, this time. So I got the company's Bread and Butter, and it's a 2019. And on the back, Mike, so it's telling me this is a classic dry California rosé with hints of juicy strawberry, melon, and rose petal. Perfect when enjoyed chilled and with equally pleasurable company.
Oh!
So, I'm glad you're here, Mike.
I'm glad you're here, Derek. Let me see that.
It has to be equally as pleasurable as the bottle, so you have to choose your companions carefully.
Very good. Bread and butter wine. It's very cool.
Yeah. Have you tried it?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, it's real good.
It's got, like, the, I know it's got, like, that assault of red that you really like.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got, like, sort of the nice,
it's
like...
It's not typically how I describe it, but...
Oh, no, I like a red one. Red wines punch me in the face.
It takes your prisoner and holds you captive. Makes me feel like Thufir.
Give me the Thufir treatment.
Yeah. Not the Kyle treatment, but the Thufir treatment.
Oh, no.
Gets you right on spot. But no, it is still, rides that line. I mean, it's exactly what it says it is. It's, it's basically if you mix red and white wine. But
I wonder if you don't have good company, if it tastes bad.
I think so. I mean,
that's one of the ingredients.
I'm pretty sure it's guaranteed on the back. Or does it make you like people that you normally wouldn't?
Oh, maybe. Oh, that. Ooh, good marketing.
That's our wine, though. Now, with that, back to the unanimous decree.
Yeah, that's a surprise. Like, I wonder why, like, what do they know that I don't know?
I don't know. There is some cool little bits in here. We're going to learn about some fold in space. Before we go too far, what do you know of Highliners, then? We've only had a few scant
I know that their trips aren't worth talking about because we skipped that chapter in the book.
Yep.
Okay, so I know that the guildsmen... Wait, are the guildsmen the same as the navigators? Wait,
you know, no.
Okay. Well, shit.
No, yeah, so guildsmen is like a blanket term for anyone in the guild.
So I know that...
That includes navigators, steersmen, your basic pilots, your engineers.
So, like, very few people are allowed to interact with, like, the guildsmen. They usually have representatives.
Navigators.
Or the navigators.
Yeah, so you're the interplay of words.
Well, I thought in the book Paul said, will we see a guildsman? And Leto's like, nope.
Right, and I'm just telling you, but, like... Guildsman, that is just the blanket term. You know what I'm saying? When you say that to me, just guildsman. But Paul is using it to say navigator.
I'm going with what I know, Derek.
I know. I guess then that's what I'm just going to clarify.
That one's on you.
Do it because I learned it from you.
I learned from watching you later.
Okay.
So we talked about, I think in our recent episode, that they travel... like light years in just like seconds. So they fold space.
They fold space, yeah.
It's less about like how fast they're going. They just sort of like mess with the space around them in a way.
Yeah. In terms of like propulsion.
Right.
Sure.
And that all you need is a good handful of spice to really get it going.
Good. Yeah. A little bit more than a handful.
Okay.
We pump it in gas.
Double fisting?
But yeah, we're taking a lot. We concentrate.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Dipping into the spice hard to make this fold happen. But that is true. Do you have any concept of the shape of a Highliner?
I did look up pictures.
Yeah.
All I have seen is basically just like either a long Pringles can in space or some like jazzy multicolored phallic looking thing.
Yeah. Both those are about right.
Okay.
even in the movie, I think they have it on like one of the notes for like the designs when they're doing a paper. Like it's basically like a cigar tube.
Okay.
Like, yeah, that's all. That's what that
gotcha.
Is going forward. So that's not going to be the shape of our Highliners today, though.
Oh, are we going further back?
Well, no, we're just going with what the encyclopedia told us. That was David Lynch's take on it when he cracked up for the movie.
That's all the images I find.
Exactly, yeah. And that art is sort of like overwhelming and really influenced for a good part. But the encyclopedia took a little different track, and I really appreciated it when I came across it. Because before this, I too only knew, I was like, okay, it's just this big long tube and everyone piles into it.
Everyone in the tube!
Yeah, I mean, roughly it does perform the same action and objective as like the what we're going to find out it's shaped like. So regardless, it's a bunch of stuff fits into it, and it's what moves through space. Roughly, your highliner. So,
do you think they have David Bowie as their like intro and outro song for like boarding?
What, like, what song? What are you imagining?
Ground Control to Major Tom.
Possibly.
Sitting in a space, tin can. Sitting in a tin can, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Could be, could be. And that's like their favorite thing to jam out to when they fold space.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you pick up, you know what? You must pick up some weird radio signals for how far out they are.
Probably.
You might be able to catch it live.
It's the only CD we have. That's why people aren't like allowed out of their ship. Because it'll just drive them insane if they listen to that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, it's really for your safety.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in CD, I'm pretty sure it'd be like an 8-track. Whenever we added, oh, yeah, whenever right. we added 65. That's right. I don't think Frank was looking forward to how we do with music. He's like, you put the reel on and you play.
We're talking about worms. Yeah,
still real old school back then. But that's cool. So your pre-knowledge... pretty minimal. I don't think it's going to affect what we go over today.
Excellent.
But let's jump back in time and let's talk pre-guild. So before we had our folding space, we were doing this all with computers.
Okay.
Because it's just like the navigation, there's so much data you got to process at once. A human mind was never going to be able to do it. So we had interstellar travel was possible as far back as at least 13,000 before a guild.
Okay.
So if you keep track,
that's
like...
quite a ways back.
Do you remember what around the year Holtzman was?
No, I don't.
Okay, so it was like, 7,600 before guild.
Okay.
So we're looking at a difference of about 5,000 years. We were like doing travel before Holtzman gives us the Holtzman wave, which allows us to have communication. Because remember, we did discover the suspensor nullification effect way back. We just didn't know how to describe it mathematically, but we could do it as an engineering feat and a technological feat. So we're using that to fly spaceships still at this time.
And are we folding space or are we traveling like light speed? How are we doing it?
We are you know what? Yeah, without the folding no, it's just like super fast travel. So it must be just relativistic. But not breaking the speed of light.
Right.
Yeah. And then the computer's just able to navigate at that high speed. But yeah, you're right. With the folding space, I believe it is just because it's outside of the technology. It's more like that that prescient trance that's helped you out.
Okay, so is it the prescience trance that actually folds space? It's not like any device?
It's like a little bit of a mix. You'll see, because they don't ever give me, I guess, like I can't give you a super technical answer, I guess. They're sort of always merged up together. Like, there's nothing that talks about the fold space machine, is sort of my catch.
I feel like Frank was just like, make it work, and slaps a sticker on it.
Yeah.
Certified.
I mean, it's semi-magic. You're already, like, you're already accepting that this dream trance exists.
No, if we spend, like, a good chunk of a chapter talking about how to make foam in the desert, like, I expect some science here.
That's fair. It does refer to it always as hyperspace travel.
Okay.
Even with these computers. Mm-hmm. So do you think that would mean above faster than light speed?
I would say so.
Okay.
Well, who coined the term hyperspace? You know that?
I don't know who coined the term hyperspace, but I think within science fiction, it is used as like a trope for a faster than light travel, where it's sort of like a subsection of space that lets you sort of get around it. So let's say it's faster than light, but we're not exactly sure why.
Okay, all right.
It looks like we're just taking an editorial way around it.
All right.
Just being like before. So, as I said before, the data was the biggest holdback for these ships and like what makes it difficult to do this process.
Being able to compute that much that quickly.
Mm-hmm. All the inputs that you intake.
Right.
So you don't hit a star or some sort of like celestial body.
Right. Like, I mean, yeah, how fast do you travel in a second? It's 300... Was it 300,000 meters per second speed of light? So you'd be like sub that?
Yeah. Yeah. Or however this hyperspace is working. But yeah, even
you have to account for 300,000 meters per second, any sort of gravity around there, any foreign objects.
That I think is the biggest thing, though, even more than a foreign object, like the gravity wells of just make, because each one's going to pull you to the side a little bit. And if you're off by like half a degree from your starting point, you might
hundreds of like thousands of light years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
An exponential degree. So obviously when Holtzman's, his first revelation comes in that like 7,500 and that's when he bursts out like, hey guys, instant communication. That is huge. Even before like we start changing and, doing the whole fold space thing, that allows us to sort of, somewhat centralize our trade and commerce. Because now, like, shipping centers can kind of keep track of all their ships that are moving out.
Mm-hmm.
Before this, nothing could ever be centralized. And all the shipping was pretty haphazard. The encyclopedia likes to go on this little description of, like, companies that would exist and doing all the transport for, like, commerce and various military functions. They might be really good in one system. Like, oh, man, they're A-plus business. The next system over, they're plagued by strikes. And, you know, maybe they've screwed over the wrong competition or they're, you know, some corruption in that one that's not in the other system. So it just varied wildly and was so inconsistent and unreliable. This is all things that, like, once we finally have the guild in place, that solves that problem.
Okay.
Improvements, they all come with the Holtzman wave. And it describes of notionally a mathematical phenomenon causing micro catastrophic folds in real space time along a selectable vector. So this is describing how that Holtzman wave works, where it's like you're causing this phenomenon, which is like folding. It's like micro catastrophic folds in real space time.
So like mini black holes almost.
Yeah. And it's sort of like passing this message along. And that's how it's getting passed. I think, like, the light speed rule, this communication. Then, when it impacts matter denser than interstellar hydrogen, I'm not sure what that phrase is supposed to mean to me. Yeah, so it needs to impact, like, when it... So, remember how Holtzman made the planet radiate his message?
Right.
That's something denser than interstellar hydrogen. So, this message hits a physical object or something, because you send it on a vector line.
Okay.
You send that it makes towards sense. Something.
Sort of like you would with the radio or the laser gun... messenger systems.
Yeah, except now it's through all these mini black holes until it finally...
Yeah, we thought the laser gun was dangerous. What? Here's my black hole gun!
And it, like, is gonna go through whatever you get it to go. It'll make that resonate out, and from that resonant point, it creates the long radio waves. And then your message can be picked up by any normal radio antenna.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so are they folding space, in a sense, by... just changing what the perceived time is like with, like, micro black holes in a way?
Oh, I mean, I seriously couldn't tell you. I would think, since it's using hyperspace, is like whatever this sub realm is that it's going to. It seems like we're dealing, let's call it the Alam Al Mithal.
The Alam Al Mithal.
I think that'll be easier for everyone who at least knows that from the glossary. Okay. Game. Like, it goes to the mystical world. Like,
Magic Town.
Yeah, yeah. And I think...
Was it Fairyland?
Fairyland. No, we're putting that on hold.
Oh, Fairyland's on hold.
Fairyland's on hold. But that, yeah, and then it shoots through this world, kind of like popping into ours periodically, it seems, through whatever these, however these folds work, until it hits somehow hydrogen, or, denser than hydrogen, which means it is moving in our world, too.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know what to really make of that.
And I guess we're just sort of like slapping on the term black holes onto that, because it says micro cataclysms. Who the fuck knows what that means?
Micro catastrophic folds in real space time.
As opposed to like false space time?
Oh, yeah.
What?
wouldn't that just be like the wrong track in prescience?
The Alam Nomithal.
So, like, yeah, it doesn't give me much description. We're really pulling strings here to try to make it work.
Right.
I think it's the best we can do, because that is the only words I get. They don't mean as much to me as they do to you.
I'm still angry that it was more creative with foam than what we're getting here.
yeah, with our...
And granted, this isn't by Frank Herbert, but still, all the things in the encyclopedia are pretty detailed. I like to slap big numbers onto planets.
Mm-hmm.
They're not great with ages, but...
No, but who is?
Who is? Really?
Frank should say those among us. Emperor's age.
Yeah.
Totally wrong. But so that, where are we going from these radio waves? That can all be received on a normal radio antenna. So that allows our communication to be instantaneous and now super improved. And we can finally start building shipping companies, right?
Yeah.
That is technology going forward. We can get things really involved. So then it gives me a little... exact example of a shipping company, because they're like, I want to talk about one to you, Mike. I want to give a name. I want to tell you about Transcom. They were a trading corporation from the 7th millennium before guild. So this is like right after Holtzman did his mad fly off thing.
Real quick, I think I need to get like a little like promotional intro thing for like Transcom.
You know what, your intro?
We're here for your shipping needs.
Let's go through their full description of what they're like, and then you can decide how it's going to pitch out. Because they are a group of cartels, essentially.
Oh, no, okay, never mind.
But Transcom, leave your wallets at the door.
Seriously.
But seriously, like,
yeah, it's just, it's a guy like a little billy club at the door, patting it on,
cranking up the laser gun.
It's like a Sadokar in a really tight Transcom uniform.
Yeah, like that guy is not from TSA. You didn't.
The Transcom Security Agency.
Yeah.
So they have this cool idea where they're going to use that technology now to keep their ships online. So they set up a computer bank, and it's going to just be the central system that feeds in. Do you know what we're going to call that system?
Central system that feeds in?
Oh, I really thought you were about to say it for a second. It's Sentrans.
Oh, wow.
You were right.
Your eyes went really wide for a second.
Yeah, it's like, shit. Didn't think you'd get anywhere close, but that was pretty much it. So they put Sentrans on the artificial satellite Xenophon, and it's deep in space. That way, it's free from electromagnetic interference from the planet that Transcom is settled on.
Okay.
Cool. Because it's going to be doing a lot of radio communication left and right.
Yeah, just get something out there to bounce off.
Boom. So we get this whole moon set up. It's just a big phone. Yeah.
Wait, what?
Xenophon?
Okay, you said satellite. How big is the satellite?
I mean, artificial satellite. Could be any size, I guess.
Okay. You said moon, so it's just like, excuse me?
Yeah, that's no moon. I'm sorry.
Son of a bitch. Did you set that up?
No, but I did capitalize on it.
Okay.
No, I did misspeak there because it is artificial satellite, but it still would be in a way. So the central computer served both to extend interstellar limits and to define control areas of commercial influence, as well as to control navigation.
Okay.
So this thing finally set up is like basically watching more than just this system and is like giving everyone kind of cues and saying, this one's going here, this is going there, please hold for this.
Right. Maybe traffic control.
And maybe you finally get a little update on the planet you're going to before you get there. So remember last time Holtzman showed up and a war was going on. Someone can tell you that now.
Let's peace out.
This is a battle zone. Maybe you skip this one. And they had these sort of pre-designated points in transit, which were basically like for mail drops. And like your ship would just drop out there. You'd receive the communication and then get your course corrections and everything and then send you back on your way.
Oh, yeah.
So it sort of touched bases with you in new ways. So this is all great. And I mean, I see no reason why this isn't going to keep growing and become perfect, Mike.
Like, this company feels like a cancer puppy.
It should. It's got that smell to it.
that cancer smell.
So it follows with, but at no time did Sentrans ever achieve its potential.
Oh.
Dun. So Transcom, it was never really more than a loose collection of cartel members. And they were kind of jealous of the traditional prerogatives of everyone else around.
Okay.
And they just sort of like banded together for their own like self-interest and then like shutting out other cartels and stuff like that.
Okay.
So they had an incentive not to be like huge and involve everybody because
it was privatized.
It wasn't for the well-being of the people. It was for the well-being of the cartels that banded up to dominate this area of space and these trading networks.
Oh, that's a shame.
So our old friends show up. We've built this big computer, and we've put this big computer orbiting in space that's communicating with everybody.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's time.
Oh, no.
The Butlerian Jihad starts up.
Oh, no.
One of the first places they go is this really popular computer that is talking to everybody out in space. And they just show up. And
they just Death Star it.
Yeah, they literally go... Oh, this is your artificial satellite?
Yeah.
So Xenophon is just obliterated. And
Xenagon.
Yeah. Touche. pretty much like you were no one. They characterized like no one was ever able to depend on centralized data retrieval for the near future.
Right.
Because it was just deemed a danger now that the jihad is going to target it every
time.
What
did everyone on the planet do? You're like, what the hell?
As it just goes dark. Yeah. Well, imagine they came to the planet next.
Yeah.
Because remember, they go through, they take everything.
Oh, right.
So, like, I bet they did that, and that was like a, oh, no. And then, like, 24 hours later, ships are touching down on planet, and the jihad is just burning everything until you have nothing but windmills.
Oh, no.
You better be happy.
Looking at that windmill funny, you're like, all right.
I get, it's a good windmill, I guess. So we get to the end of, this is the end of the pre-flight one, where the fate of interstellar flight was shared by Endeavors throughout the known worlds. And whatever the spiritual gains of the jihad, and there were many, there were vast offset losses.
Really?
So
who wrote this book?
Probably probably clearly a jihadist. And the jihad was very great, and we had a happy time.
Oh, God.
But yeah, it obviously is just acknowledging how much that set them back. They lost about like 10,000 years of hyperspace navigation infrastructure and technology.
10,000 years?
It's what you're pushing. Well, I mean, you're taking away everything. So. Yeah.
And civilizations then, like rise and fall in that time.
Yeah. Now, you might recognize a little phrasing in the last sentence here. Not until the Spacing Guild became the wings of the Imperium was unity within plurality established.
That's really good. This has got to be written by the same dude.
I think so. Or definitely with the wings of the Imperium. I was like, ooh, they had to be. Yeah. You had to at least talk to that guy.
Yeah.
If you both came up with that separately, that's bizarre. Because that guy used a baby metaphor to get there. And that was like, that was a weird metaphor. But so all that brings us up to the key point. That kind of butts us up to the beginning of the foundation of the guild, which we touched on a few episodes ago.
Right.
Justa Mason and Freelo Mason and like the Ixians that showed up there. So we're going to go. Now we're talking Highliners. I'm ready to bring you right up to guild times.
Yeah. Okay.
So the first Highliner is going to be about 200 years after Justa Mason Man did his job.
I forgot about Justa Mason.
How could you? After he like steered them to greatness, essentially. Mm-hmm. I bet he had to have set up that project, or at least the ideas of the project in getting us there, since he did so much of the formation and was paramount to it all. So the first thing I started with looking into this was trying to break down what the hell Highliner means. Because, like, what is that?
A Highliner?
A Highliner. Any idea?
I don't know. It feels very, like, first class to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, riding on the Highliner, like, you know, above everyone else.
Yeah. So, I mean, I easily figured it broke into two words there, of high and then a liner. Liner being, like, an ocean liner or an airliner.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't find anything that high is like attached to, like a word of some kind.
The way it's spelled too is interesting.
H-E-I-G-H.
What does that mean, high?
Again, no idea. Tried looking it up. I couldn't find a word for it. It makes me think like German, but looking down that, I didn't find anything. I tried dropping it into Latin. I tried dropping it into Arabic. I even threw Hebrew into the mix. And for the life of me, I couldn't. But I did find a little bit of a background for a liner, at least.
Okay.
Because that is like a traditional thing. And I was sort of like, well, what is a sea liner? Or an airliner? Because quite frankly, I know that is a term, but I couldn't tell you what that actually means. And it is pretty much just basically ones that go on a regular scheduled voyages on a set route. So on the sea, these are called line voyages. So it's just that kind of thing. An airliner is doing this one.
That's what line. I was thinking, because it's just the vector.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And so the Highliner is the same thing, where these are just interstellar
routes.
That
makes sense.
Yep.
All right. Now here's my theory and my take on this.
Okay.
All right. It's called the Highliner. We're going to call that Alam Amethal sort of weird black hole realm we're in. We're going to call that the High.
We're going to step right into it. Yep.
And like when you're guildsman navigator, you got to be riding that high the whole time.
Yes.
If you're going to be steering a Highliner.
This is playing off how high the operator is.
Yeah, no, like the higher you are, like the straighter line you go.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Highliner. They fire it like a bullet.
Yeah.
It's
spelled
with an E because they're just fucking high.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just what do you mean, man?
I gotta name this too? Fuck.
But there's also like an I in it, man. Don't you see? That's all I want. Just a tripped out navigator.
Just a couple of them. Like, two tanks just floating by. Like,
man. Oh, no. You never.
Oh, no.
You only want one flight. Yeah, if you ever got two, you'd never take off.
Really? What?
They'd just be talking the whole time. Just blowing each other's mind. Well, look, they both look impressive, so they can't see each other, but then they open their eyes and they're right in front.
Whoa.
All right. I like your Highlander take. Moving on now. I got a hard stop this like worm theory.
Yeah.
As everyone just turns the episode off.
Yeah.
So these are the primary interstellar transport ships of the guild.
Mm-hmm.
You and I both know they're enormous.
Yeah, you can load up truly everything on them.
Mm-hmm. Now, they do vary somewhat in size and detail of design, which gives us some great, I think, creative room for both the ones that I'm about to describe to you and the ones from the 1984 movie to exist within the same universe.
Okay.
Could just be made, thousands of years apart. They are, however, share some facets and some details where they're always fast. They're always difficult to maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
Always enormous.
There's no wings. Like, how do you maneuver them?
Yeah, exactly. Very, very
I guess
careful.
You don't really need wings in space, do you?
But we're the wings of the Imperium.
That's true.
We put some little stylized wings on everyone.
Little bird on everyone.
Yeah. And then most important of all, they are powered by the Holtzman effect because we got to fold some space.
Right, right.
So because of their size and extreme complexity of the external neutrino circuitry, which affected the translight displacement, Highlanders were expensive and difficult to build.
So neutrino circuitry. A neutrino is a type of particle.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Do you know, you might know more about that particle than I do.
Oh, it's been a while since I've been reading.
Damn, I was hoping that you would.
What do you know
off the top of your head?
Well, I know neutrinos are produced from stars oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
There's, oh, pff, idiot. Okay, they're types of leptons.
I'm right here.
Oh, sorry. Okay, for leptons, you have electrons, muons, and tau. The neutrinos are just sort of their alternate egos. They're like their evil goatee versions, if you would. You've got the electron neutrino, the muon neutrino, and the tau neutrino.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Do you know, is there anything that we could do? Like, do they produce an energy? Are they like, how do they exist in the world?
Neutrinos are weird, and honestly, they just don't make sense, even within the standard model.
Gnarly.
Electrons, obviously, we associate that with electricity.
Yeah.
Neutrinos don't have a charge.
Right.
So neutrino circuitry just makes me think, what?
Yeah.
So, like, right. How does that work?
I'm not sure. I was hoping that's what I was hoping to pull something out of you for, like, we need to talk about how you think it works. And they tell me that, like, the neutrino circuitry remains live after they cut the power to it for centuries.
What?
Okay, so you know about much about that as you do about worms?
Yeah.
That was that answer?
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, so let's... I don't know what it is, but like, so that's what we're using to power the skin of this thing.
Okay.
That we use it, and that's like helpful in some manner for the translight displacement. And so like, that is... That's folding space for us, essentially.
Oh, you know what it might be?
I don't know jack shit, Mike.
Because neutrinos can oscillate.
Okay.
So they can change between, like a neutrino can change between light, or leptons in general can oscillate. So like an electron could become a
like
neutrino.
Positive, right? Yeah. Oh, wait, is that the same as like positive or negative? I'm sorry.
Well, neutrinos don't have a charge, so no
right.
On that.
So what do they oscillate?
When they interact with the atmosphere, there's a probability the one type of neutrino can oscillate into another type. And so they're constantly like in flux and like changing, or there's at least a probability that they can do that.
Hmm. So I wonder if like the circuitry is able to take advantage of that somewhere?
Probably.
And like leverage it with like knowing in which position it is in.
Well, like because some of them have mass and some of them don't. So maybe oscillating between that constantly changes it. And neutrinos with mass actually do have somewhat of an electron vault.
Mm-hmm.
It's like several hundredths of one. I don't know. Maybe just like constantly like in a constant oscillation is just like we got a little power. It's like a car spinning in its tires to sort of charge the battery, like just a little something.
I sort of like and so just from what you just described to me there, in my head I imagine, and this is I'm gonna run with science fiction wise in this, but somehow this circuitry is like switching between like the no mass, and then like aligns them all to no mass, and that like vroom just makes your ship disappear from space.
Well, that's an interesting idea. I mean, I don't think, but it's, I don't even know. It just says neutrino circuitry, so nothing makes sense.
Yeah.
Damn you, throwing words around, McNally.
I like how we feel like we have to be able to describe
it. We have to.
It can't be real, then. We're taking it really.
If you can even describe
it. We are assuming the burden of responsibility.
If you can BS it. Lightsaber, powered by a crystal. Fuck it. I don't care. Makes sense to me.
Well, I mean, they told me powered by neutrino circuitry.
Yeah, that's true.
You like you act like there wouldn't be a follow-up to, okay.
I don't know.
So I have the crystal. Let's talk about
what do
that.
I do with this?
Yeah. So we have that. We have this neutrino skin, which, yeah, I guess we're not explaining today. I think we got it all right.
I think, yeah, all right. If you guys have a better, like, theory for that, let us know, because we're going to rack our brains over this for a bit.
Yeah, it's really absurd. But like I said, I think it's somewhere where someone's just put enough cool words together and concepts. I wonder when the neutrino was discovered. That could be a side.
That would
too.
Be in the early 1900s when the standard model was established.
Oh, okay, so that far back. Yeah. They had time then to figure it out.
Because you have Bohr and you have Einstein talking about like quantum physics and like what God can do with his dice.
Play some mean D&D.
Play some mean D&D.
So even at the height of its dominance, our guild, once they're in their prime, they've never had more than 5,000 Highliners. So the entire Imperium is served by 5,000 ships. Transporting.
Right. Everybody. I think you mentioned that.
I did. Yep. Way back. We kind of touched on that. A few of these little facts will kind of pop up and be familiar.
Each one of those, like the amount of money that has to go into them.
Yeah. Like, well, they're great ships, and they're like super durable. And it says, like so many elements of the Imperium, almost immune to technological obsolescence.
Wait, what's that mean?
Like, they'll never be obsolete.
Oh.
They're just like, it's like the Thopter.
Right, I mean, it's the best that we have now.
Well, it's just, like, we've basically perfected the system, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, there's nothing wrong with this design.
Throw a rock through space. That's pretty much what we got.
Really? Yeah, I mean, honestly, just letting a rock fall through space is the simplest thing.
I guess it is, really.
Now, we have accurate records for one of these Highliners that it bore various names and numbers through all of its life, but it was undisputedly the same ship based on our logs. Like,
okay, so it was like one of the first ones then?
No, it does come, it was made in the year 4,700 after Guild.
Okay, so it's been around.
Deep on, but it was around until 8287 after Guild.
Oh, so it's quite a little bit of time
like
there.
3,400 years.
What did they do with, like, used Guild ships? And why did it go out of circulation?
I'm glad you asked. Let me keep going, and we are going to come right back to that, of the first time non-guildsmen discovered a guild ship.
What?
Dun, dun, dun. So before we head to that route, we got to go back to some of the earliest known Highliners. Like I told you, they were constructed about 2 centuries after the establishment of the guild monopoly. So that's when Jasta Mason negotiated with Chom and the Emperor, and they set this all up.
Right.
So we get like 2 centuries of working, and we start pumping these out. And within another 2 centuries of that, so we just go 400 years now from those days of the Masons, and 75% of all guild tonnage is being moved by the Highliners now.
Wait, 75%?
75% of all of it is already in the... That's how game-changing they were.
Right.
Of like, there's no use in using any other ship now.
I mean, they are the heavy lifter.
Exactly. And they're just running between all these core worlds, essentially. And like, they have a map set up so like... It goes to this one system, and then if you're going to, like, any of the neighboring ones, you just drop off from there. But then the Highliner is always going to that system through.
Okay, so it's sort of like the space subway.
Yeah, because remember, Liner, we're going to have these little routes pre-established, and you join up. Mm-hmm. There was one thing we're going to touch on when we do another guild dive later on, but the way their ticketing worked, and I just thought it was really weird and included this, if you go to more than 2 destinations on your vacation, you get half-priced on the return trip.
Like, is that in there?
It's such a weird deal. Yeah.
Why?
Buy 2, get 1 half off.
For your... Not even 1 free, half off.
It's your trip home.
It's like
one you have to buy. That's great. I don't know why they put that in there.
I might as well get another work trip in there.
Well, I guess I'm going to Gamont now.
Well, I guess at that point, like, you're really paying for your next trip half off, aren't you?
What do you mean?
Or I guess what was the price between worlds? Is it?
I don't know. I didn't get into that. Hmm. Maybe we'll touch on that when we do for it. I think I'll be able to roll that into the Gamont storyline. We'll touch on space guild tourism because that's the article that's
under. Because it's a tourist planet, more or less, right?
Oh well, what else are they doing, Mike? I mean, I guess it's just a recreation world, but yeah, it's a tourist planet. They're not doing a lot of business. So I got another little document. This comes from the year 9920. So we're in the year 101, 91.
Okay.
The year Paul. So this is just like 200 years ago, give or take, 300.
All right.
And the guild yardmaster at Ix, he's writing this to his superior. So Ix is that awesome technological planet.
Right, right, right.
They have one of the guild, shipyards to build these Highliners out, as well as other guild ships.
Oh, I didn't realize Ix did that.
Yeah.
Because I guess when I think Ixians, I always have them like almost paired with the Tlaxlu.
Yeah, kind of like closed off from the rest of the world a little bit.
Yeah.
The Ixians are like a little more open. They're definitely secretive with their technology and their works.
They're all about the tech.
That's proprietary technology. Yeah. We're not sharing that with anyone, and it's a little illegal if we do.
Oh.
Because, well, they ride that line of like...
I was going to say, yeah.
The rumors are always that they're breaking the rules.
Do you think
they
do have something there?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. No, they do. They do.
Oh, it's not even like a...
I've had to side with the God Emperor. He told me all about it. It gets weird. Yeah. But did you have something else you want to say on the Ixians?
No, that's it.
So then we know they were also involved. They're the original founders of the
Society
of Mystical Mariners. I love that. Moved over to and the two pillions. So we have an Ixion Yardmaster. Do you want to give this guy a name? I promise you, he's not going to die.
Let's see here. Yardmaster Stratum.
Yardmaster Stratum.
Yeah.
What'd you choose that name for?
Oh, it's one of our patrons.
Ah!
One of our listeners, Derek.
One of our patrons, one of us to this very episode. Oh! All right, so stepping up as our Yardmaster.
Yep.
So he writes back and shows that our guild has maintained about 275,000 ships.
Okay.
These are smaller vessels that we have.
Okay.
And they're streaming about courier, passenger, miscellaneous travel. Mm-hmm. But Stratum's same report from the yard tells us that, you know, he's looking at all these smaller ships. Mm-hmm. And Stratum's report clearly indicates that the total payload of all these minor ships together could not have been more than 10% of the total payload of the Highlander fleet.
Why are we using those ships then?
You know, we still got, you know, the biggest thing in like UPS, Mike, it's that last mile. It's getting it to your doorstep.
Oh, so is that what these little ships do?
Yeah, exactly. Ah. These are our frigates. These are our little guys that are taking you here and there.
Gotcha.
Like, we still got to own some and ferry them down. Like, guys, Helen Mahayam, like, she's not always taking her own
ship. These are
our
little
taxi.
Our little rowboats from our main ship.
Exactly. Yeah, from our big galley.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they go off. So that's just, again, highlighting like the I was going to say discrepancy, but that's not it. But the disparity between like the Highliners and the smaller vessels.
Right.
Like it's just not even the same.
Not even close.
Mm-mm. So even though these were like among the fastest vessels in interstellar travel ever built, they were never in their lifespan adapted for combat use.
Right. I mean, like, why would they be? And how are you going to catch one?
Whoa. Wait, I had the opposite idea of like, why wouldn't they be?
You afraid that someone's gonna try and take one over?
What, a Highliner?
Yeah.
No, okay. Oh, no. I mean, so the guild doesn't make them combat for obvious reasons where the guild doesn't want to be involved in it.
Right.
That's really their only reason. I was just thinking, what a powerful weapon that would be if you could warp to a planet's surface. Like, imagine you've built this thing to do it. Like, it's not all delicate and has to be in space.
Right.
Like, you can just collide onto the surface of a planet. Wouldn't that be amazing and just, like, catastrophic?
I mean, I guess it is the ultimate super weapon.
Right. And it's like, I mean, the only reason, so the guild's not sharing the tech is why no one else gets to. But I think there are, like, infinitely more possibilities for war.
Did you ever watch Stargate SG-1 back in the day?
Oh, a little.
There's a cool race called the Asgard, and they were, like, the Norse mythology was based off of. They're little gray men. That's their entire race.
They're what?
Little gray men. They're all clones of one another.
Oh, those poor guys.
Yeah, they're adorable. But like their biggest technology is teleportation.
Okay.
They can like port all over the place and it becomes a big plot device later. But their big thing is like, we'd love allies. Like, you guys are starting to come along. You can use Stargate, so that's a big plus. It's like, but they're kind of hesitant to share their teleportation tech.
I believe it.
And the biggest reason is because humans, we just want to teleport nukes everywhere.
Yeah.
That's what I imagine that you would do with a Highlander. Just like, hey, let's just take this practical spaceship and fucking slap a nuke on top of it. Call it good.
Yeah. Yeah. And you just throw it at places. I mean, you wouldn't even have to put the nuke on because you could just send. If that mass shows
slap
up
that
there,
big red button.
Like, I don't know what the displacement is when it comes back in from this hyperspace or from this fold space.
So wait, fold space, does it actually go into like a different
realm? It most certainly does.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we got some of them don't fold back.
So no.
we gotta talk about that a little bit of like, where are all these ships ended up?
Doing some origami, you realize that you had glue all over the thing. Oh no.
Oh god.
Be nice and gentle.
But I just wanted to point out that I know there's a potential for combat use and that no one gets the option to develop it. Mm. I think it would be super useful in combat if we ever did.
The guild could just be like, we got a new emperor.
By what, like just killing the old emperor?
We could just destroy Seleucus Secundus and then...
Yeah. Well,
what do you got, emperor?
No, that's his prison world. He is on Kaitan.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Where the...
Now you're blowing up two planets. See, it gets out of hand real quick, Mike.
How many Highlanders do we have? 5,000?
How many what? How many shots do I get?
Caladan, Gaty Prime, Akaz. Ooh, Akaz, we need some of that high.
Harmonthrap. Maybe that's what happened.
That's why Harmonthrap's just gone?
Just gone. Just like, we just hit it. Never talk about
that. Yeah, I mean, they wouldn't publicize that.
And even the encyclopedia is like, don't know what happened, didn't see anything. So
I like that theory.
I think we're onto something.
But you were talking about someone's trying to use a guild ship, a non-guildsman, for the first time, right?
In this story?
Yeah, I thought you alluded to that. Or maybe not this story.
No. No, a non-guildsman used a ship?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I know.
Oh, never mind then.
Unless I'm really...
No, misspoke. I think you mentioned once to me that some guy stole a Highliner and crashed it.
No. That was the guy who... He did steal a ship. He just stole a guild ship.
Oh, it wasn't a Highliner.
It was one of the 275,000 smaller vessels.
Who cares about those?
Our Yardmaster.
Yardmaster, just a little check there.
274,999.
Stratum's definitely got a hard hat and clipboard.
And a scowl. Because I'm missing a ship. Okay. So the guild, though, they were super diligent about protecting their investments. And no Highlander was ever lost to military action.
Okay. But that's a very...
You've already made me explain that one a little bit. Yeah, we did lose some to other stuff. And then it says, few indeed seem to have been lost for any reason. The guild navigators did not make mistakes. The guild maintenance crews were scrupulous and competent.
Way to go, Stratum.
Yeah. These guys are basically our NASA. Of like above and beyond. Yeah. Stay up all night to make it up. But so obviously that leaves a little room like for error. And for something bad happened eventually. We're getting ever closer to it.
Yeah, no, you're alluding to it. I'm excited for it.
So even the best constructed and best machines were still going to wear out at some point. So even that one that I tracked for
And the
you,
fact that it went for thousands of years is just impressive.
Yeah. 3,500 years, pretty good for a ship.
There can't be that many like moving parts to it then.
No, it's basically just the neutrino circuitry.
Hmm.
And then otherwise that, it's going to be just a big sphere. There's not too much in it. Because it all relies on that guild navigator for doing the work with his mind, essentially.
Wait, sphere?
Yeah. It's going to come to the shape. I think we're...
A cylinder or...
No, it's a sphere.
Oh.
So the one... I haven't gotten to that point yet for it. It pushes it way back down. But I'll tell you right now, they design... Because you're making this Holtzman field...
Right.
It's a field. It emanates from the center point of the machine.
Okay, so you want to go around it. So
and that's
sphere,
the most
that
efficient, yeah,
okay.
efficient shape. You just, boom, build it to match that shape. You get a sphere.
There you go.
Cool way I think you can rationalize it out for the David Lynch one is sort of like, are you familiar with the Alcularry drive?
No.
It is like this cool, faster than light, I think warp drive would be what you would call it.
Okay.
That the scientist developed up. And on paper, it works. It's just like the energy required for it is so astronomical, we can't build it.
Oh.
But like, on paper, it works.
Interesting.
And it creates... So I think it has to be as round as your ship at its roundest point, right?
Okay.
And then it basically like punches the hole and you're riding through a tunnel. That is that wormhole. So that's why it only has to be as round as that like machine can make its field.
Oh.
It's somehow it's like passing particles over you. I'm really not sure of the math of it, obviously. Mm-hmm. I remember back when I was playing Kerbal Space Program, that rocket simulator game. There's a guy, Scott Manley, who is an astrono gamer, because he's a full-time astronomer, he loves to play games, and he was talking all about it through his channel, and that's what I learned about it through. And so they have it modded into the game to kind of show it off, and it was really neat. The coolest thing, too, is when you use it, it warps you. You have your same velocity that you started with when you get to your finishing place. So if you were orbiting Earth at, like, a low altitude, you know, low Earth orbit, and mm-hmm. you do this thing, and you go to, like, the Jovian system...
You're now still within like the same velocity you were when you were orbiting Earth.
Which is not enough to go around the Jovian system. So you're free falling into the planet. Yeah. No. So you still need traditional propulsion to correct for that.
Right. Okay.
So that's how I imagine that it would be for the guild too.
Right.
When it's moving through its system, wherever it drops out, it has to correct in some manner for its current velocity.
Definitely.
And though they don't use that as the reason for why they park so far away from planets, I would think that's the reason why you park so far away from planets.
I feel like it helps at the very least.
it's on the paper, yeah. Oh my god!
And it's not to account for error because like they have to be pretty precise to pull through space.
It has a very specific thing it does account for.
Oh,
yeah, I'll touch on that. So hitting these errors, best constructed, like I said, even that happens to them. The ones that were removed from service, they were never like broken up or recycled. And that's because, like I told you before, there was a risk of dismantling the neutrino circuitry, which by its nature remained live for centuries after power to it has been cut.
That's just wild.
Yeah. And so all that outweighs the like the economies of recycling the materials,
right,
which is insane for how big and crazy that ship is. But you got 3,000 years out of it. Yeah, you're probably like, all right, let's do it. So decommissioned highliners, this is what we were just talking about, they get parked in cold orbits around planetless stars. So the guild just takes them out and hides them. Well, one, we don't want anyone ever to have the technology.
Right, but like you, it doesn't make sense to break them down and recycle parts.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't.
So it takes centuries for it to go down.
Oh, I guess it is a pretty huge thing, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think for the point is that it takes centuries for that like circuitry just to become able to be broken down.
Because it's live the whole time?
Yeah, yeah, it's
live. Oh, okay.
For so long after, for whatever reason.
I hadn't
considered
that would be a big issue when it comes to decommissioning it.
Yeah, yeah, and it seems like it is. So for whatever reason, is it ultimately you're going to say, why not throw it into the sun then? Or?
I mean, yeah, that's my next question. Why not just destroy it at that point?
Yeah, and I can't give an answer for that. I would just assume that maybe eventually they get around to dismantling it. But it's
I guess this is several... company's been around for several thousands of years, so I guess a century isn't a big deal.
Put it
in the books and be like, we'll get back to that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Son, this is going to be your project.
Not only that, you're going to tell your son to tell his son he better finish this. Yeah, yeah, you just pass it off, pass that buck. So I bet there's some sort of way they go about it, but...
But yeah, they just hide it behind empty systems.
Yeah, just dead ones, which would be really gnarly for anyone with a telescope, where eventually you could find that. And the way that we find planets is by you just stare at it, and then you wait until you see a pixel change color. And the result, and you're like, well, something's there. Start looking at that pixel. I feel like we'd just be watching these, waiting to see one orbit and be like, something's there. Go check it out. But they might not even be big enough, but who knows? So
you think you could have a giant Hubble telescope with an oil lens installed on it?
Whoa.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
That would be really awesome.
Yeah,
I really
is anything
like
mentioned like that in the encyclopedia?
No, there was no Hubble telescope, Mike. That was isn't that straight out of the 90s?
Hubble?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it is out of the 90s.
Yeah, Captain Hubble came way late in his day.
Yeah.
It was all with our space shuttle program.
Oh, we use Chandra now, don't we?
I don't know. I mean, I hope we still use Hubble.
It's not the best one though now.
We have the Chandra
X-ray telescope, I think.
Yeah. So that's pretty gnarly. And they are floating up there, and the way they were discovered, Mike, is eventually there's some people flying around. They're kind of free from the guild at this point.
Oh.
And we found these decommissioned ones.
Did they know where to look, or was it completely by accident?
Do I have the answer for that from you? Let's see. The discovery about 3 centuries ago of one such retirement site at Ida Opachi provided most of our specific information about the Highliners. Reference to them in the documents of the Rakus archives have proven so far to be surprisingly sketchy and vague. All right, so I don't know. I'm going to say probably a little mix of both. Maybe just some guy just got on the right track and then saw something and then went over there to it. But
all right, let's investigate this. Is there a name for this group, this little cell that discovered it?
No. It's sort of like... We have a I don't even know how to really describe it, but basically everyone's a little bit freer than the Imperium.
Okay,
because it's kind of a post Imperium world.
Right, right.
Because we're in 12 or 13,000 at this point.
AG.
Yeah, after Guild, 4,000 years after where we are with Paul right now, kind of dealing with stuff.
That this is taking place.
Yeah, that they finally find these parked ones.
Oh, so this has not even happened in contemporary history to Paul.
No, nobody has any idea. It takes a long, long time. Anytime I bring up the Rakus Archive is super far in the future. Rakus Archive.
The Rakus Archive?
Yeah, R-A-K-I-S.
Okay.
Rakus.
Does that have anything to do with Arrakis?
I mean, in the sense that it talks about Arrakis. Arrakis is in the Rakus Archive.
Okay.
Yeah. Nomenclature wise, it does steal from it.
Okay, gotcha.
It's far away from that word. So when finding these orbits, these teams get out of their ship and they're probably super excited. No one's ever been seen a Highliner, especially the inside.
This is the golden ticket right here.
Yeah, we finally get to get on the ship and look around. Maybe we'll find a steersman, Mike.
I mean, probably not.
A guildsman. No, they're completely decommissioned.
The guy's still high in the tank. Oh, wait, what?
I'm just taking a nap. What year is it? And these explorers, first ones to ever set foot in a Highliner, first ones to probably see a Highliner. They move in and they go through the whole ship and basically like catalog everything they see, everything they find. So the first thing they remark on is the neutrino circuitry, which was mandated by field mechanics and relied much more on sheer power than on elegant geometry, characteristic of modern craft.
It doesn't need to like be symmetrical or aerodynamic or anything. It just needs to have the juice.
Yeah. Okay. And it doesn't even need to be laid out carefully. Like, right. It just needs a power pumped into it. Mm-hmm. And we're not relying on any of these kind of tricks, essentially, in design. For this reason, a Highliner was a simple, featureless globe. No windows, no viewports, no nothing.
So it's, okay.
Just a couple of doors.
I like the idea that it's just a sphere instead of like this big oblong thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just is somehow has doors that things go up and do, and then it closes right back up. So
that's really cool.
Maybe even like a sphere that just splits in half and like separates a little bit. Mm. Everyone kind of goes in through the crack or whatever side, locks in, then just
kind of a cool idea.
Seals back up. The second noteworthy feature was a function of the guild navigational techniques. Since the guild navigators saw rather than calculated their routes, there was no need for the elaborate observational and locational devices common to both earlier and later ships. A Highliner carried a simple radar set amid a small telescope, neither of which was of any use during translight operation. Thus, Highliners traveled blind, but for the drugged dreams of their navigators.
Oh,
that cool? So that's all you get. And again, hitting anything, they don't need anything on the ship. So all the conventional features are pretty much dumbed down to you got a navigator. You're good.
Wow.
Now, we have little direct information about the size of a crew. So like how many people were on this whole giant ship.
We need
ship.
At least one. We know that.
Yeah, that is very true. We do know we need at least one. Now, since all the Highliners at the star that we ended up at and we're exploring, they're all though fitted with gymnasia. Game rooms, libraries, elaborate galleys, and various like quarters, you know, dining rooms.
Right.
This is all in the
luxury cruise.
Yeah. This is for the guild though.
Oh.
Yeah. Because Rainier,
yeah, everyone else gets a garage.
Yeah. Literally, everyone else is in a garage. It appears that the guild and its employees traveled in comfort.
Do you think the guild has like double pane glass, or they're just looking out like, oh.
No, well, specifically not allowed to see. Yeah, they're all blocked off from it. Right. So it follows up with like all passengers were carried in an unpressurized hull, either in their own frigates or other ships or in self-contained modules. The hold was only a network of girders and cables to which the cargo was attached.
Oh my God.
Covered only by the light aluminum skin that carried the neutrino circuitry. So again, this outside of it
light.
Is...
aluminum skin.
Yeah, this is basically like the equivalent of it being Mylar, I think, to us.
Like, so like all the circuits are basically just through like a mesh system, more or less.
It seems like like either I bet must be on the outside to include like,
right,
and just creates that field and sends it in, but it's just a little like webbing. And then the
that's
middle
wild.
Is just a big spider web of cables and girders.
Sounds like they don't really pay much attention to that part of the ship.
What part?
The part where, like, they're paying customers and chilling.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. It seems like you don't have to. I bet if the ship never changes velocity because it goes into a thing, like, it essentially never moves. So, yeah, you
right.
just have to, like, make sure things are, like, settled enough that they don't move on their own accord, I guess.
That's wild.
You get going. Now, how many people do you think are on Take It to Run a Ship?
To run a ship?
Yeah,
or that's, like,
full guild crew counting, like, beyond the navigator.
All right, so the navigator steers the ship.
Yes.
I'm sure you've got to have some sort of mechanics doing other things.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
how many you want?
Let's get two pilots. Let's get a navigator.
Boom,
let's get
boom.
Some guards.
Yeah.
No one's coming in there.
Fuck no.
Lots of guards. Everyone else is guards. They're all guards. It's just a militant ship.
You run a weird guild, like.
What about, how close am I?
Like, you started strong, and then you're like, now I'm the emperor. Give me some guns. I think you just made a prison.
I'm
power.
Rejecting.
Yeah. So, taking into account the number of duty stations and the designs of various control systems and similar evidence, we can estimate that a usual Highlander crew numbered about 80.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. You're pretty good. I mean, once you just dump guards,
I mean,
in the
I guess
mix, you got up to 80.
Yes.
So at least 5 to 8 of them were navigators.
Oh, there's several navigators.
Yes, yeah, so they do. They work like shifts.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
You get tired, you get sleepy.
I guess that makes sense. I guess they didn't consider that because, like, what? One of the trips you suggested that took like 3 days that normally takes like 7 years or something.
Yeah.
And they were like showing them, like proving what the guild can do.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess you wouldn't want to stay awake for 3 solid days if you didn't have to. After like steering through the known cosmos.
I need a breather.
It gets a little hectic.
Yeah. Like a sandwich or something.
Yeah.
Little so nap.
You tag out and you get another one in there.
Here's the thing though. If they just stop the ship for a bit, would anyone really know if they're inside? Be like, it's just gonna chill. Let's take a nap for a bit. I mean, maybe it's all of the guild trips only take like 1 or 2 days to do, but like the guildsmen are just like, man, I just need to chill out for a second.
You're like, you want to start like the flat universe conspiracy? You're yeah. Like, I don't even think they fold space. I think it's all an illusion. Some serious conspiracies here. So we have 5 to 8 navigators. The fusion plants must have required the attention of at least 2 Mentat engineers at all times.
Well, gotta have some Mentats there.
Dump some Mentats in. The remaining 60 or so crew members, so these would all be guards on your ship, on mine are going to be pilots, shuttle crew, life support technicians, financial and banking staff, cargo manipulators, and
yeah,
so
there's
more.
Always going to be an accountant.
Always need an make sure we're in the green the whole way. This is why the guild is so successful, Mike. We diversify. So that's going to be like pretty much who's manning that whole thing and who's living like the beautiful life, apparently.
Right. I mean,
in
like,
this highlighter.
I feel like if I was in this this Imperium, I'd want to be a part of the guild. The guild's got it going on.
It's starting to make sense,
yeah.
Right? Like, they don't get in wars. They don't deal with the bullshit. You can go anywhere
what they
you
say
want.
Goes.
Yeah.
Who's going to argue?
Emperor? Might push back.
Enjoy your one planet, Emperor. How's that air doing?
I like just I would leave you there. Like, yeah. Why don't we warp right down to the planet's surface and we'll teleport a nuke? And so the speed of the Highliners ensured that no voyage within the limits of the Imperium would last too long. The fastest known Highlighter transit was made in the year 12717. Now, this is going to be good, Mike.
12717, okay.
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. Don't attach onto that. But this is much like our Ample Eros, Bernard Fuchs. He had to make the fastest journey he could,
right?
And I didn't have I told you how fast he did it in. I didn't know what to compare it to. I got something to compare this one to.
Okay.
So, the flight from Ix to Aiglon, A-I-G-L-O-N, Aiglon, two different worlds, it takes 8,138 standard light year. That's like the distance for it.
How long?
8,138 standard light years.
So that's
we're measuring distance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, in the fastest Highlander, it does that amount of speed. So we're going 8,000 light years. We do it in 19 days, 2 hours, and 21 minutes, 40 seconds. A speed of about 63.4 light year seconds per hour.
Light year seconds per hour? What did you just say?
No, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, wow. Yeah, I did say that. When you said that back to me, I was like, that's totally wrong, Mike. What are you talking about? That's totally what I said
to
you.
Like, I'm just trying to comprehend, like, I don't get it.
Nope, that was the wrong light standard years per hour.
Okay.
Yeah, light year seconds, not a thing.
Light year second hours.
So it's 63.4 standard light years per hour, essentially.
Wow.
That's how fast this thing's
cruising.
Wow. That is our speed. So, going forward, if we can ever figure out how far Delta Pavonis, the star of Caladan, is from
Terra.
No, I was going to go with the one on around Arrakis, and I was just, it's Copus.
It's a Copus system.
Just a Copus system. So if we get those two stars, we can figure out how long the Highlighter went. Because the Highlighter, that was the fastest.
Or it's Canopus.
Canopus?
Yeah, it's Canopus.
Yeah, because it's like Canopus B is, I think, what I was thinking of. Yeah. It's like the star that's in there, the white star. So 63 is the fastest. Most Highlanders go about 60% of that. So we're looking at 38 light standard years per hour is our average Highlander speed.
Okay.
So if we ever figure out the distance, that'll be how long the crossing was.
Oh my God. Are we going to backwards engineer
in between
this?
Hey, we got Jessica's age. I'm sure I'll get it.
Wait.
And then find it in the book. So.
All right. We're pausing this for a second. Get a piece of paper.
Well, I don't know if you can find those two stars, can you? Like, the distance between them? Because, like, who would have measured that? You're only going to be able to get Terra to here and Terra to there. Yeah, they both are in the southern hemisphere.
Right, perfect. Okay. We know how many degrees apart they are. We know 19.92 sine of angle A, or so angle A. So tangent 170.
That can't be. So Derek and I started to work this out, then realized that we don't remember any of our trigonometry. We forgot that you need a right angle for Pythagorean. We basically forgot everything we ever learned about math.
I've actually been sitting here reading for a little bit.
You son of a bitch. I've been scribbling here like a bad
man. You got like scrap paper going. He had like three things. It's like, we don't need two cooks in this kitchen.
It's like that scene from A Beautiful Mind, but it's just like the internet, like dial-up modem playing in the background instead.
Well, I mean, yeah, you had to go find the angles for the stars as best you could.
I have the angles from the southern pole and the southern hemisphere for each of these constellations, and I got the individual stars as well that they're based off of. I'm just having trouble here.
I know. I'm the one making you stop.
They're almost 180 degrees away from each other. There is a slight angle to them, so I'm just going to go ahead and say that it's probably close to 330 plus or minus 20 light years.
Those stars apart?
Yeah.
Isn't the Canopus 310 light years from Earth anyway?
Yeah, but do you know how far Delta Paloma is?
It was 19.
Yeah, 19.92.
Okay, I would just think with an angle, if they were then separated by like 180 degrees, that seems like they end up like right next to each other.
Wouldn't you add those together then?
Add what?
They're separated by 180 degrees.
I don't know.
They're basically on opposite sides of the planet.
Right. I just think, yeah. And then it would just be way further out.
Yeah.
I guess
on opposite sides of our star.
Of like this. Yeah. A lot.
Of a lot.
Yeah. That's our farther side.
So I'm guessing about 330 plus or minus a bit.
Okay. Take it as is. And we're going about 40 standard light years per hour to get there. So get me to 300. It's going to be like 8.
So it'll take you about 9 days.
Hours.
9 hours.
Hours.
Nine hours.
Hours.
But it takes like a week because they're really high and they take a bunch of snack breaks. They watch a couple of like movies, Cheech and Chong.
Well, you know, you bring up breaks and that's a good point. You do got to take breaks, Mike. Because within that Highliner, the energy requirements are huge. Tremendous. So about 20% of the gross mass is just H2O, because that's going to be fuel for the fusion reactors that are powering this whole thing.
Oh, so right? Wait, it's powered by water?
By water!
That's really funny.
So for really long transits, refueling was occasionally necessary.
Okay.
So we'd stop and refuel, and that's probably going to take probably like half a day right there.
Right.
You know, like, it really seems like the traditional travel time getting you from the planet surface to the ship is probably the same amount of travel time to, like, get out of the solar, you know.
Oh, my God.
From star to star.
Right,
going
right.
From, like, that
That's
speed.
Really crazy to think about.
Yeah, because, like, with the conventional travel, you'd still be feeling G-forces.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that would have to be taken in consideration with how fast you go. And, like, human bodies don't do well under G-forces.
No.
We have, like, I think we have never even studied beyond, like, 7.1 Gs or somewhere right in there. Definitely not beyond 8. And, like, sustained...
Yeah, we have.
No, for sustained durations.
Oh, for sustained durations.
We can peak someone into it, but, like, we can't do it for long term.
We peaked at about 40.
Yeah, so see, this is, I'm specifically talking sustained, that we do this test with like fighter pilots and stuff, with like spinning them in the centrifuge kind of room.
You're right. And it's close to like 8 or 12 that they just like pass out.
Oh, yeah, like lower. For most people, it's lower than a minute or two. Like, I think the guy that was like a record holder got to like 8. And that was when they were like, we have to stop because we physically don't know what's going to happen to you.
Right.
If we keep going at this, as everything just collapses inside of you. So that's got to be in consideration with our ships going up into it. So they got to take their time, coast. You're probably like 1.5 Gs, maybe. We're going easy. Now, using this heat, making all this energy, heat became our big problem, and we did have to vent all this heat out.
How do you vent the heat out?
Oh, Mike, we turned that baby into X-rays.
Oh, it just blasts X-rays out there?
Blasts X-rays in a 360 field outside of this thing.
Wow, do you think every quasar we see out there in the sky is really just a Guild Highliner?
Hold that thought.
Oh.
So, this technique, this is why, and this is the reason they give me for why they don't go close to planets. They go far out, make a little X-ray boom, It's good enough. It gets a little dispersed. The electromagnetic field of your planet takes care of it. You go about your business. That's their reasoning for why they're always at least 150,000 kilometers from a planet's surface. So out in those greater orbits. Now, there was once a malfunction. And this is like the greatest recorded disaster in the guild's history, where the waste heat disposal system failed.
And did it just microwave everyone?
Yeah, instead of shooting the x-rays out, it turned them all inward.
They were given the still tent treatment.
Exactly, yeah. Oh, no. And it fried everyone, sending these intense x-rays ripping through the ship, and there were no survivors.
Oh.
Records indicate that several systems malfunctioned at once, including all four of the failsafe systems, which would have shut down the translate operation. Had not another failsafe system operated properly, the Salience, that's the ship that it was.
It wasn't Space Titanic?
No, it wasn't. Because if one more thing had failed, it would have vanished entirely, never been seen.
Oh.
But because the microwaves, or the x-rays rather, fried everybody on the inside,
yeah,
the Mentat engineers at their post at the fusion the fusion reactors,
oh, no.
I think it was, what do we have? The supervising Mentats died, releasing their grips on the laser triggers. So that was their final failsafe. They had to keep these held the whole time.
Oh my God.
They let them go. Fusion immediately ceases and the ship just stops.
Who are our Mentats?
You can give me two names. I don't got names in my logs for them. Stratton didn't seem to write these ones down.
Stratton, what are you doing?
Reports, I assume he's
lazy. Mentat Che and Mentat Hop.
Wow, okay. I did not pick this, but you just chose two dead Spice Worlders, so.
Oh, oh no!
These Mentats are already dead.
Oh, well, okay. Maybe we'll save those ones for another time.
Oh, come back, guys. Come back. Don't get on that ship. Don't put them on the space.
Satan's got a cool bird. Check this out.
So, they let go of their failsafes, and that, is the only reason we found out about this problem, essentially. Now, the guild never admitted that it did any error, whether it be technical or by the crew. They never admit anything. But after this event, the operating manual and the field transmission wavelengths were all modified. So he made some slight tweaks to some stuff, but we didn't do anything wrong.
But let us just fix some things.
So, this brings
not fixing, fine-tuning.
This brings me to our quasars, Mike.
Okay.
So, at least 57 other Highliners have disappeared during transit.
Never to return?
Never to be seen again.
What?
So, those could be our quasars.
What?
Where do they go? Ooh, are they all in the same place? Is there a pile of them somewhere? 57
the Highliner
giant
graveyard.
Highliner globes are just somewhere. Somewhere in the Alamo Mithal or whatever. Now,
wait, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Have any houses completely vanished because of this?
Ooh, that's a valid point.
What happened if the Atreides trip over to Arrakis just vanished?
Yeah, Mike, let me.
I mean, shorter book, I guess.
Let me up the scale even more. Imagine, if you will, a guild Highliner pulls into orbit around Kaitan, takes its station up. And they're going to be transporting, say, the Emperor on some coronation route.
Oh.
And he's going to go meet all the worlds and say hello to his people. Behold me, the Emperor, it is I. So he takes his shuttle up and he gets aboard the Highliner. He's locked in like everyone else. He doesn't get to see a steersman or anything like that.
Right.
So this is Emperor Hainor the Seventh.
Okay.
We're in the year 9471.
All right.
After Gil.
Is not a theoretical scenario anymore, is it?
No, it's getting really specific real fast.
No.
So, 720 years ago from our current day, where we are,
yeah.
This Emperor Hainor...
Isn't that close to when Ibrahim was around?
No, Ibrahim's before.
Oh, that's before. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. Totally different
Wrong
scale.
End of the spectrum.
So, Hainor's ship gets docked up there, and this guild ship, engages. They have the Mentats all on their laser arrays. The navigator gets into a spice dream. Mm-hmm. We turn on, the neutrinos flicker. The whole ship, voomp, vanishes. And it never returns again. The Emperor is just gone.
What?
So fuck a family, Mike. We just disappeared the Emperor. Now, I can't take credit for this idea. This was genius, though. And I was talking with someone at work, and they mentioned, what if the guild saw something? Because they have prescience.
And they thought, oh, we take them here.
Well, just what if this Emperor was such a threat? that they just did this on purpose. Like, what if they offed the Emperor? Because I'm like, damn, that does work.
The ultimate master of assassins.
Otherwise, I'm like, what happened? How do you broach that conversation? Do you just go to the Landsrat and be like, so I hope you guys got somebody else in mind. we might have lost your Emperor.
It's got to be written somewhere in the travel forms.
You think it's like in their contract? And we are not responsible
for any disappearing emperors.
Any of them. And we know there will be at least one. So that's pretty great. And then it does follow that up with this line from the encyclopedia. Nevertheless, the safety record of the Highlanders, as the guild in general, must surely be one of the best in all the history and prehistory of public transportation.
Oh, no.
I'm like, yeah, way to follow that up. Now I forgot all about that Emperor. Because you're right, you guys are really safe. But man, when they lose a ship, they lose hard.
Oh,
because it gets a full Highlander.
Right.
All kinds of people up in there.
Oh, my God.
So after Hainor the Seventh was just gone, and he was the 343rd Emperor of the Known Universe.
And was this, is Kareena always the house of the Emperor?
Yes and no. I do have a list of, like, every known Emperor ever.
Or is it Kaitan? Is that the...
No, that's the planet. But I was just going to let you know that the family names are a little fluid.
Okay.
So, like, it'll commonly be, like, the Kareenos, or, like, the Kareenos merged with, like it's right. Either the Fade Kareeno family, or, like...
I said Kareena, but I think I meant Kaitan, like, the planet itself.
Oh, like, is that always the...
The seat of the Empire. Hmm. Or does it vary depending on who's the Emperor?
That's a good one. I think it is.
Okay.
I think the Golden Lion Throne is always there, but I don't know if it's ever like... it's basically always been one family. The Kareenos are kind of like always involved somehow.
I can only imagine the people that got off of the Highlander at Kaitan. Just like, man, it's good to be back home. And then just watch like the Emperor just like...
Oh,
you better believe some Sardaukar are going to be questioning that motherfucker.
I don't know, Mike. That contract's pretty foolproof. It just says right here, even emperors, even emperors. I think they got it. I think they're foolproof.
Oh my God.
But that's that brings me to the end, Mike, of our whole journey through Highlanders.
Wait, so has anyone ever? I swear you mentioned once that someone like jacked a guild Highlander. I know that you didn't.
Definitely guild ship.
So would it be possible for anyone to just like hop on like?
We talked when we did the foundation of the guild. So someone, their biggest thing was like the spice is the real secret. So nothing else matters.
Someone could just hop into that spice tank and be like, "Let's go."
Yeah. I mean, like they're gonna die and they're gonna fail, but like they could try. Yeah. You know, it's sort of like anyone can be a Bene Gesserit. You're not gonna do it tomorrow, though.
Right.
But, like, clearly, if you're raised from birth, like, anyone can do it to an extent. Same with the guild navigators. Anyone can fly that goddamn ship. It's just going to take some practice, and it's very particular. And then the reason no one can do it is because it's so secretive. And, like, they don't...
No one knows how.
You can't read that book. So that's all that's holding the rest of us back.
Oh, man. What is this entry credited to in the encyclopedia?
All right, for references for these from our guild, or from encyclopedia. So on the interstellar travel, that was that first one that we did.
Okay.
This is going to be by Lors Cardin. It's a good space name.
That is a good space name.
The Flame and the Flower, a short history of the Butlerian Jihad.
I didn't realize that Ivor Gurney was writing about things.
They're poets everywhere. That's amazing. That's a pretty solid book name, too. Like, I checked that one out. Now, for the Highlander entry, I got a few other ones for you. So, we have a Holtzman Effect, Interstellar Travel, and then Sending Me On by EB. Oh, I guess I just got initials. He's not even going to give me his full name for this. Is Integer and Matrix in the Holtzman Formula.
Yeah, I don't really care who it is.
That's a real page turner, Mike. No one ever guesses the ending for
Maybe
it.
I need that to figure out distances between planets.
All right, so let's see if Liu Chulo, so it's just L-I-U, I think I'm pronouncing it. Would that be Liu?
Yeah.
It's kind of how I want to go with it. Now, he wrote Legends of the Spacing Guild.
Ooh.
And that was published on Caladan. Now, Mike, then we get a good guy. Thufir Dies.
Spoilers!
As I said that aloud, I was like, wait a second. Is that
what?
His last name is D-Y-S.
D-Y-S.
Is that not Thufir Dies?
Is this?
Okay.
Thufir Dies?
What? You really, like, startled me with that.
I startled myself. And I copied that down. So Thufir wrote a book, A Study in Highliner Operation. And so pretty standard. Then we have, where's our, okay, you ready? Fidanza Wershale.
Okay.
Fidanza Wershale. Into Dusk. Interstellar Travel. 9500 to 14500. oh my god, they keep putting more and more books in here. This one's DP Killam Porubang.
What?
Killam Porubang.
Killam Porubang.
K-I-L-I-M-P-O-R-U-B-A-N-G.
Okay.
Killam Porubang. That's the author. We haven't even gotten to the book yet.
What's the book name?
The Husks of Edda Opachini. So that's around the star where they found the empty.
Oh.
Yeah, empty guild highliner.
Oh, that's cool.
So Thufir dies. That's a great name.
Thufir dies.
That second one is Killam Porubang. I'm happy with that.
Wow. Well, that was wild. I'm really glad. I can see why it was anonymous for that topic. Or not anonymous. Unanimous?
Unanimous.
Oh, my God.
I was like, what is that?
Bottle of wine, trigonometry. I'm just, like, melted. You know, okay.
Do you got something you do know? I got
a brain melter. Something that usually melts your brain, Derek.
Something that draws me into a quick panic.
It's the glossary game.
Oh, it's so good to be back.
Oh, only once a month now.
Just like your doctor ordered.
Just like the doctor ordered. Just straight from Thufir dies. I have got a word for you that I actually lost my place on. I just had it here. Why?
Dude, you are just a mess.
I'm a hot mess today. What is wrong with me? Oh, there it is. Found it.
You found
it. How
could
I forget it? It's so silly.
There's no way for me to know if this is the same as the previous word. But I'll believe you.
Obviously, as we do this, we're going to keep running out of glossary words here.
Oh,
but
yeah.
This one stood out to me, and we haven't gotten to it yet in the book, so I wanted to
see
what you could tell me of it. It's from the L section.
L's.
And it is just simply la la la.
La 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 la. Okay. Okay. La la la. Okay.
We got the definition and sort of the translation of it.
Right, right. So I think I'm going to go, I part of me wants to lean towards, like, the water cellar thing and something in, like the Fremen market.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's, like, it's very simple and straightforward. I'm going to go, this might be wrong. I'm going to go with, like, a Fremen fighter.
Ooh.
And, like, a war cry kind of deal, where I'm literally imagining that, like, that kind of a thing.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think I want to give you a definition for it, like, just sort of like calls for the dead or like a vengeance maybe or yeah, that's where I'm painting it. I can't help but put it in that setting. But is there, can you give me a clue as to like the definition?
I mean, I think you are so on the right track.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I can give you a clue because you're like, you are on the right track. It's just,
Ooh. Yeah. How close am I?
You're very close.
But I don't have it yet.
Not
I need
yet.
To like grab one more thing.
Or like,
is there an actual translation to it?
Yeah.
Or is it like an explanation of it?
There is both.
Okay.
Or less of an explanation. Well, yeah. So, yes.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, I don't think I can give you like a translation other than like...
Well, the word is law.
Yeah.
And so, what do you think the law means?
I mean, the article, the, in like Spanish and French, but I guess I'm going to go...
But no one's crying. La, 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 la. Da, 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 da.
Maybe like goodness? Because I wondered, I'm deriving from, like, part of God.
Right.
Of, like, the end of, if it's Allah, is God. So maybe, like, La, is you're saying it in, like, that respect.
Right.
So maybe, like, God or the spirit.
Gotcha.
Like, ghost.
Well, it is a Fremen word, which is what I think we were sort of, like, going for.
Sure.
I think most everything from this book is going to be Fremen going forward.
Yeah, give or take. And I was leaning towards, like, something the Fedekin would say.
And it is a Fremen cry, but not a war cry. It's a cry of grief.
Ah.
And La translates as ultimate denial, a no from which one cannot appeal.
There's a lot of no appealing.
There's no appealing.
There's no appeals court
no.
in this whole world. Yes. Okay. I like that. So it just means no?
Yeah. Like law translates as ultimate denial, a no from which you cannot appeal.
Oh, okay. So it would be like a wailing, like, you know, just like absolutely not.
Yeah.
Like he shouldn't be dead or something like that. Okay, that's gnarly.
This is a Luke Skywalker no.
No!
We just need the cut in the audio. La, 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 during that scene. See how it translates. Probably not very good.
Really, it depends really how you pitch it. La, 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 la.
I feel like that's probably not the timbre they're going for.
Yeah, you know, when in Rome.
But it's good to have the glossary game back. Yeah.
That is a fun one. I liked it. So easy sounding. So close. Such a good failure. Oh, glossary game. You bastard. Well, thank you very much, Mike.
You're welcome. Anytime. I always love to get back into the glossary game.
Get back into the mix.
I think that satisfied me. Hey, if you're listening, you've made it this far, you know where to find us. Spice World Pod on everything. You can direct message us on Patreon as well if you have any questions or pertinent
information for us or comics that we need to be aware of.
Or if you just know math.
Yeah, oh God, yeah, help us with math, please.
I'm not going to lie. I had a hard time this morning.
Well, hey, at least your excuse, half a bottle of wine in
half a bottle of wine.
No one does a math test after half a bottle of wine.
That's true. No one should do a math test after half a bottle of wine.
Yes.
But thanks for listening. We're going to go ahead and post up the new topics for next month. I don't have them on me right now. I think we haven't really decided on them, have we?
I mean, it's going to be some holdovers from the last one. So I think we're going to keep Akaz up.
Yep.
Onto there. We're going to add in the Norma Senva and Aurelius Venport story.
That Aurelius? Aurelius?
Aurelius. Thank you. I think keeping Gamont on there and our favorite sister's whole week trip that she won of her time on Gamont. So you guys can definitely vote through those. If there's anything that you would love to see us put on that list for voting, send a message about that too. We're always here for you guys. So.
Yeah, we won't post it until the first of the month.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with that, Mike, there's only one more thing to say.
Without you, the spice can't flow.
We all have the same joke at the same time.
Nice. It's got a little bit of that red bite, but it's got like the...
He's like, Derek's about to be a basic bitch.
you're like, ooh, rosé.
Yeah. Ooh. I see me and Tristan having a nice afternoon someday in the future. Tristan?
Just walking on you guys. You got a box of wine with a little like curly straw.
We got some cucumbers on our eyes.
Lounging down.